This podcast is under WildGeeksProductions.com and D20Radio.com.
Between the time when wargamers played with chainmail and the rise of the Wizards of the Coast, there was an age of gamers. And unto this, Gygax, destined to bear the crown jewel of TSR upon a troubled brow, to show you all how to roll for initiative.
The Roll for Initiative Podcast, Volume 2, Issue Number 88. I am DM Vince, sitting alongside DM Matt.
Hi, everyone.
And DM Will.
Hello.
And we got a great show for you tonight, and, you know, that's it. Bye. No, okay. we have a great packed show for you tonight, a couple of things in the past we're going to talk about, but what's been going on? You know, what's going on the boards? What have you been seeing lurking around on the boards, Will?
Oh, no, not much. I've been busy, you know, still dealing with those Hearst art molds and everything now that that I got that new mold in. So I've been working on the planks. I've been the planks are for the like the wooden bridges, rope bridges. So I'm working on those. As a matter of fact, I painted some last night, and I'm doing some new techniques with the coin piles so that I can make them look actually, you know, like coins. I'm working on the doors. The doors are going to be the tough part. I have 25 doors made. Now I got to paint them and then glue all that stuff together, and hopefully that'll all work out. And then I got to do another 50 cast or 50 more molds of those, and so I can have exactly 50 doors for B3 Palace of the Silver Princess. So I've been real busy with that. And I have also been going crazy because I got Dragonflight next month in August, 26 more days of 3 days of gaming. Then we have PAX Prime coming. Then we have the entire month of August for the Renaissance Fair. Of course, I think I'm missing 2 weekends out of that. So, I mean, it's just a lot of stuff happening at this time.
Cool. So you're going to be busy. Yeah. No, Matt, you're going to be busy at Gen Con next month.
Yep. Actually, it will be 1 month from today. I'll actually be driving to Indy. So, because I'm heading up on the Wednesday and I'll be staying through Sunday.
Stinks I couldn't go this year because it actually fell on my birthday, too.
Oh, yes. That would have been fun.
Yeah.
I've managed to get a room at the Homewood Suite. So we got like 6 people in a suite at a better than a con rate price. So.
Oh, I still have my reservations for the Omni. I have to cancel that.
Yeah. If you want to save the $50 cancellation fee, just post on the Gen Con forums. Mm-hmm. And someone may just take your reservation, and you can just transfer it to them at no fee.
Oh, all right. I didn't know you could do that. Cool.
Yeah. If you can find someone to take your reservation, they don't charge you the fee.
All right. We'll find out.
We're going to have to work it out sometime so that when I'm supposed to, my schedule is for Gen Con next year. I'm going next year. And I got some friends and family up there and everything. So y'all don't have to pay for a room.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Now, let me know about that stuff. Yeah. So it's like I tell anyone, if you're going to go to any of the conventions here in this area, especially PaizoCon or Dragonflight, any of the other conventions, or even to the Comic-Con and everything,
yes,
I got plenty of room. I have a 4-bedroom house.
I want to go to next year, go to San Diego Comic-Con, the big one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, whatever.
All right, it was pretty good this year, except for that lady getting hit by the car, and then that issue with Sylvester Stallone and everything. I felt sorry for the guy. I mean, he must be having a rough time right now. Yeah.
What happened with Stallone?
His son died.
Oh, wow. Oh, my.
Yeah.
His 36-year-old son died.
Yeah, it's sad to see that and everything.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
Because I saw the clip on Arnold Schwarzenegger and Stallone, you know, going at it there because they were there together, and they were just having a blast. Yeah. And then I guess the very next day, that's when they found out, and that poor man's going through hell right now, so it's sad for him, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, poor
my sympathy's out there, Sylvester Stallone.
Yep, and then leaving the San Diego Comic-Con, Zack Ryder, Dolph Ziggler, and Justin Roberts at WWE were in a limo. Their limo was rear-ended.
Yeah. I heard there was a lot more WWE people there, too.
Yeah, Alberto Del Rio was there. I can't think of who else, but I know there was there's a ton of them out there.
I heard Punk was there too. CM Punk.
Yeah, Punk was there, probably just taking in the convention. Knowing him,
yeah, probably.
Yeah, he's a huge comic book fan.
He's a comic book nerd. I know that. Yeah.
I think King Kong Bundy was there, but he missed his plane.
Oh my God, King Kong Bundy! They're bringing back all the old people on Raw these last couple of weeks, so you probably would enjoy that watching that. Mm-hmm. I'm dying to see who they bring back on the 1,000th episode.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah, there's just so many names they could drag out, so it's like,
Yeah.
King Kong. Hey, you know what, though?
What?
The good thing is, though, those new D&D books come out next week.
Yeah.
Over here, anyway.
We'll see.
They're already out.
Yeah. They would have already left the distributor.
Some people have already bought them.
Yeah.
They've been posting their pictures online and everything.
And what's the overall reception of them?
Oh, nothing, but I'm seeing a more positive than negative. The issue, though, is are these books that you're actually going to use? Like I said, these are limited edition books. If you have first edition books and they're in good shape, use them. Don't, you know, there's no sense to pull the plastic off these books. I'm keeping mine in plastic.
Yeah, yeah, it's just like the 3.5 reprints they're going to be doing.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to open them. I'm just going to keep them away and use them as collector's item, except for that one set that for the contest and everything that we'll do.
Really, they're doing a 3.5 reprint?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
They're releasing a 3.5 again. I don't know why they're doing that, because they already released a limited edition set of books, those leather-bound, the black leather-bound books. I don't understand the logic of why they're doing that again.
Considering on the aftermarket, the 3.5 books still go for cover price... Why not?
Yeah, I know. I just not see. We were just down at half price books just a day ago and everything, and we're seeing, you know, those black leather bound books are $75.
Yeah, they had two sets of limited edition 3.5 books, the leather bound, and they had another one which I saw at Gen Con last year. So, they were like a bluish color.
I'll have to check that one out, see what the deal is on that one. Yeah, it's crazy. I don't understand. I can understand the first edition books, but the 3.5, nah, no big deal.
I'm putting the links in the window here for the premium books that are on sale via Amazon.
Right.
So people in our audience, if they don't feel like going to their gaming store or whatever, Matt will just stick the links in there, and they can just go buy it on Amazon, which I'm probably going to do.
Wow, that's very interesting.
Well, they're pre-sale right now, it says. I don't know what to do. I guess Amazon is it? I thought it wasn't supposed to be on Amazon, but it's here.
Well, I do know that I did see one email going out right now, and this is what's happening. I don't know if Wizards of the Coast is contacting stores them to know, but what they're trying to avoid is someone coming to the store buying all the books at once.
Amazon selling?
No, we're not going on Amazon, but going on eBay. Because from what I understand right now, people are doing that right now. They're trying to sell them for $200 for the entire set.
Well, you know, people are going to do that no matter what.
Oh, yeah, you know how it is.
Whatever. So I put all three books in the window. They're all going for around $28 to $31. What are they going for in the actual?
$34 a pop, and I believe the DMG is $44. I believe overall it's like $135. See, $35 is $70. $70 plus $44, what is that, $114?
Yeah.
So including tax and everything. So $125 for all three sets, I believe it is.
We're looking at $88.84 for all three books on Amazon with free shipping.
Wow.
Yeah. You can't beat Amazon.
No, you can't do that. Yeah. That's the way to go. If you want these books that badly, you got to get your orders in.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if this is just going to be pulled down when it comes out, because it's probably not a real thing. I'm just wondering about that.
Well, if it's sold actually straight. Who's the seller? Is it coming from Amazon or is it coming from a third party?
Wizards of the Coast. It just says Wizards of the Coast.
Well, then it's coming. That's coming. Let's see. Let me pull up. It should. If it's coming from Amazon, that's real. Yeah. Unless Amazon doesn't get their shipment of them.
And they're going through Amazon Prime too, so you get free shipping.
Right. Yeah. That's actually bought by. That means it's actually bought by Amazon and stored in their warehouse.
Wow.
So, oh, cool. About a month from now, these will be down to like $20. I'll buy them then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like to see them in a slipcover case, like a three-book slipcover case.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been interesting if they did it like that. Like they did the, well, they did that with the 3.5 and the 4.0 books.
Yep.
Yep, they put them in that slipcover. But from what I understand, they're all wrapped up. The paper's smooth. They're on, you know, that smooth paper.
Yeah.
I don't know what they call that kind of paper. Let me see what else is going on. They said the artwork is original. They said nothing's been changed. I believe the pages are gilded.
Okay. The erotic? Well,
you know, from what I understand, when I, from some of the posts and everything, some of I think some is, but there's some that isn't. So I don't know what printing they're taking this from. So.
Huh.
There's a bookmark in there, a real nice bookmark. I know it's not made of silk, probably some of that fake stuff. But anyway, it looks like the books have done real well, and people are saying, I'm seeing some, you know, positive reviews about it. So, of course, you're going to have your one or two out there. They're always got something to complain about.
Yeah. What are you going to do? But I'm glad that people are going to buy them, and maybe this will bring some more people over to us. You know, they'll be like, oh, old school books. Let me search on the web, and then they'll find us, and they'll learn more about the game.
Yep. One can only hope.
One can only hope. What are you going to do?
Unless all of us old grognards end up buying all these books and new people never actually see them.
I would rather give it to someone new than buy it. If I had a chance to give it up to somebody new, let them buy it. I have tons of these books on my shelves. I mean,
right. Yeah.
It's like brand new to like falling apart with tape on them.
Yeah.
What are you going to do, right?
Yep. Yeah, it's like I have 3 first edition players' handbooks, 2 DMGs, 2 monster manuals, and God knows what else. So
it's always good to have a lot of players' handbooks.
Yeah. Yeah. I find the best way to accumulate those is just buy random lots of stuff, and they just start multiplying.
Or if you're on Amazon, you see one for like $1.37, you just buy it.
Yeah.
That's what I did a bunch of times. All right. Cool. So let's end this with some sage advice.
Sage advice.
Sage advice. Take number 3, folks. That's right. It took us 3 takes to do this sage advice. Starting intro. Okay, so we have a bunch of emails this week, rfistaff@gmail.com, or you can voicemail us at 570-865-4210 and leave us a voicemail. First voicemail comes from DM Juan, and his reference to the last show, Woodchuck, was from Record of Lodos. Remember last episode, Will, we were talking about that? We're like, who's Woodchuck?
Oh, yeah.
I kept saying Woodchuck, and he's like, I'm not going to tell you until next week. Well, he's not here this week, sorry. But Woodchuck is a reference to the thief in Record of Lodos War. I forgot about that.
Yeah, I had no clue who Woodchuck was. The only thing I was thinking was that animal.
Yeah, I was thinking of Top Gun for some reason. He said he's also running a 1E game, and it's partially due to our podcast. Thank you very much, he said. Awesome. Below is a small game story. If you want to stop reading here, I understand. No, it's okay, I'll keep reading. before I started running the game, we were in another 1E module, the Temple of Elemental Evil. We finished it with many character deaths along the way.
As it should be.
Yeah, right. I know some of you aren't fans to the Cavalier. Well, that's not true. Yet I must say they are fun to play, though I lost the first Cavalier to the White Dragons in the Air Node. His protege conquered it, though. DM Lon. I've never actually played through the whole entire Temple of Elemental Evil.
Yeah, it's a rough module, I can tell you that. And the only way I would, well, you know, I ran it a couple times and everything. And, and unless you have a group that really works hand in hand together and work as a team, that's the only way you're going to survive it.
Yeah, and the fact that the protege is the one that actually took out the White Dragons, a nice little story twist. It's very much the Obi-Wan Kenobi and Qui-Gon Jinn with Darth Maul.
That's what it is. I mean, you know, the Cavalier reduced the dragon 99.9% of the hit points, and then he gets killed, and then his squire comes up there and stabs him with a dagger, does 1 point of damage, and kills it.
Yep.
And it's just like that. What was that movie, Dragon Slayer, when the guy kills the dragon, blows it up in the air or whatever, and the king comes out there with a sword, climbs on top and sticks the sword in, makes it sound like he was the one that killed the dragon? That's what it reminds me of. I mean, you know, the king comes out, he didn't do nothing. Oh, yeah, that's awesome. I like that. That's funny. But I love Cavaliers, just to let you know there, Lon. I love Cavaliers, enjoy them, and I'll play them every time I get the ability to.
Do you play the Cavaliers with the errata, or wait, it's written in the book?
Oh, no. Yeah, the errata, yeah, has to be fixed. Yes, the errata fixes the incorrections, yes. They do not have 12 hit dice, they have 10.
It's a couple of little other minor tweaks, but other than that, it's pretty solid.
Oh, yeah, solid character class. Very well done. I enjoyed it.
I don't know why many people are down on it, maybe because they think it's more powerful than the base classes, but it always has its disadvantages, too. And we talked about this a while back. But
yeah. Well, you know what I think it is that no longer is the Paladin a subclass of fighter. They're a subclass of Cavaliers now. So I think it is what it is.
Yeah, I think people get hung up because a lot of the negative aspects are role-playing aspects, which those are easy to gloss over if you want to just focus on rules and number crunching, and that's why they seem broken, because they're balanced kind of like how Jedis are balanced in Star Wars games through the use of the Force. You have the Paladins and Cavaliers. They have to follow their code of honor. But if you have a DM that doesn't enforce that, yeah, they can be broken.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about that. And I don't think a lot of people like the idea of starting off at -1 or -2. Well, it's -1. Was it -1, then 0, then 1? Well, wait a case. They start off two negative levels.
I think it's 4, actually.
Yeah, I forgot what it is right now. I don't have my book in front of me. But some people just didn't like that concept. And again, you made a good point there, Matt. It's about the role-playing aspect. And, you know, people miss out on that stuff. Again, you got some people that just do not want to think outside the box. They prefer to stick with first edition, no more, you know, and that's it. It's done.
Yeah. I like the challenge of the -4 level, actually. It's kind of like a good role-playing challenge.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And then, you know what, it doesn't hurt for everyone to start off at -2 or -3 or whatever, and then move on from there on.
Yeah. All right, next email comes from DM Benjamin. I've been DMing for a little while now, and I realized the other day that I have never actually ran a module. I'm thinking about running the Salt Marsh to start things off for my next campaign. Excuse me. I was wondering if you had any suggestions for this module, or if you know of any other low-level, simple module to run. My group has already played Keep on the Borderlands. Thank you, and happy adventuring. Well, Will, you're like the module guru here, so... Really?
Well, Salt Marsh is a great series of three modules. However, depending on how your players role play and carry themselves on, they have to be extremely careful in the second and third one. Now, not knowing whether or not they listen to the podcast, I'm not going to be very careful not to let off any spoilers. There is some great role playing opportunities in the second and third. If they do it right, they can leave the game with some great experience points and some good magical weapons and some great allies. And do y'all remember the lizardmen in there?
Yeah.
And that's my primary focus is on the lizardmen. The lizardmen are not the bad guys. We all know who the bad guys are. I'm not going to say who they are, but the lizardmen is solely a role playing opportunity there. You know, the lizardmen have a problem of their own dealing with that. Well, I'm not going to tell you what they're dealing with, but the fact is the lizardmen are dealing with an issue, and if the players can go in there with that do not kill everything that looks evil mentality, they can actually make some allies there to help them overcome the bad guys. I will tell you right now, even though it is a hack and slash module, that module will end your party quick if you don't plan ahead, because it's an underwater adventure. You're dealing with an enemy that can fight underwater, and the characters are going to be at a disadvantage.
Right.
Just got to plan a great series of modules.
Yeah, you may even maybe start with the Village of Hamlet, just something if you've never ran a module for. It's kind of open, and you can easily spin that off into any other direction you want. You don't have to go into the Temple of Elemental Evil straight from the Village of Hamlet. You could start with Hamlet and then go into the Salt Marsh, because I think that they're a little less likely to end up having themselves killed than the Salt Marsh series. So you could like break it in with that, and it's kind of really open. It's more of, well, the players decide we want to go here, then it tells you what to do once they get there, as opposed to, well, the players need to go to this area in order to advance the story. So there's a little, it's a little more open.
Yeah, it is. Actually, you are correct. It is a lot more open, everything, and maybe you have to, you know, kind of like funnel. And that's what I do with adventures like this is this, yeah, if they want to branch out a little bit, but, form the adventure and funnel it back toward their eventual goal. Now, other modules, now, yeah, I see that you play B1. I mean, I'm sorry, B2, Keeping the Borderlands. Woo! I mean, cliche module, no offense. But you know what? There's other great first-level, second-level modules, like The Secret of Bone Hill. It's an L1. Great module. Short, to the point, get it done, and then move on. I mean, there's so many modules out there that you can play that are straight to the point. It's just awesome.
X1's another one that you can try.
Ooh, X1's a little harsh, though.
Yeah. What about B1?
B1 is good if he has the time to do that. B1, B3, I mean, a lot of the X modules and B modules are pretty good to go in that sense, you know, as far as being low level and, you know, I don't know what level they are right now. If they're third, fourth, and fifth, well, then you can open the higher B modules and so on.
Right.
B3, I love B3. Great module.
B3 is a good module. You're right.
I'm telling you, I really enjoy it. That's the one that I run all the time with new groups. Anytime it's a new group, I don't care if it's Pathfinder, I don't care if it's 3.5, first edition, that module will be run.
And it doesn't matter that it's a basic edition module or a classic D&D. You can always really, you know, translate it pretty quickly. So.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Anyway, all right, so that's recommendations there. Cool. Let me just get my notes here, and we'll get to the next email. This is from Sira Whitetail. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Sirrah. If I'm pronouncing that wrong, I apologize. It's not a name I'm very familiar with, and I'm not good with names to begin with. So, hello, I've been listening to your... There goes my note. Hello, I've been listening to your podcast for a little while now. Unfortunately, I'm a little backlogged. And I remember correctly, you mentioned in your episode about giants, there wasn't a beastery of giants or something. Well, I found one. It's TSR0921 Beastery of Dragons and Giants, AC10.
Yeah.
I'm actually looking at that. Yeah, it was for classic D&D, correct.
That's that orange one, yeah.
Yeah, I have – well, mine's red.
Yours is red, yeah. Mine's like an orange color.
I just thought I'd let you guys know, and thanks for putting on your podcast. It proves to be a lot of enjoyment on long drives. I agree with you. Long drives, these podcasts are awesome.
Yeah, that's an interesting supplement there, AC10. And considering that, I mean, this is old school stuff here, and if anyone can ever find one of these things, I tell them to get it and everything.
Oh, yeah.
I like it because, one, it gives you a perspective of how tall or how large dragons are compared to a normal player character.
That is that chart, as soon as you open it up on the inside, that is the coolest looking thing. Well, they have like the green dragon, the fire giant, the sea giant, yep, the storm giant. And above, they have a black dragon, gold dragon, white dragon, like flying around. Compared to, like, they have giants and they have a human fighter, this little tiny guy in the corner.
Yeah, and they got him just at 6 feet. From what it looks like, they got him just at 6 feet. And it goes on down the whole list and everything. It's pretty cool.
I didn't realize a cloud giant was that much taller than you.
Oh yeah, those guys are gigantic and everything, and that just, you know, relays to you why they do the damage they do with the weapons they have.
This is a great little book.
Yeah, it was good. Now, do you have the second portion to it, the dragon spell generator, and then you have the dragon rulers and all that stuff too?
No, that actually didn't come in my copy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I did get a whole thing right there, and it's pretty cool how this generator works. Now, I'm not going to tear mine apart to see if it works, but the way it's set up, it does work.
Yeah. So
it's pretty cool.
I see. I'm looking at the PDF copy of it that I have of it, and it actually shows the rulers in it and everything.
Yeah, it's the second set. So, again, an interesting supplement. I don't know what it goes for online, if it still goes. You also notice they got the sea giant, which is kind of funny because they didn't have a sea giant in first edition.
No, this was made for classic, so.
Yeah, that's just interesting if you look at that. Yep.
I'm wondering if it's actually for sale on Amazon. Give the people out there an idea of what the price would be.
Yeah, I couldn't tell right now if I take a look. Let me see here. I mean, I'd look on eBay, see how much something like this comes across. But yeah, that's one of those things. I don't recall that conversation.
It was between me, you, and Nick.
About there not being a giants.
And I think Nick said he didn't believe there was nothing for first edition reference in giants.
Right.
Or you can get it used on Amazon for $10.49.
Wow, not bad.
If you want it brand new, you have to pay $271.
Wow, really?
Yes. I don't
know. Well, I can tell you, I see it online. I see it on eBay, and I'm seeing some that's in great shape for $13.95, $20, and I'm talking about buy me now. $30, $45, $25, $57. So they're online.
I don't know where these people get these prices from. Like $200. I pulled a book off my shelf the other day because I was looking for future notes and things for the show, and I was looking through it. I had a book called Grim RPG.
Yeah, I remember that one.
By Fantasy Flight, right?
Yes.
The book, I looked on Amazon just curious because I was going to maybe buy a second copy because for playing use. The book is $200 used, $400 brand new. I was like, what the heck is going on here?
Well, there's also, if you look at the number of copies, there's probably not that many. So this could easily be a copy that's been sitting up there for years, hoping someone's dumb enough to spend that much money for the book.
Yeah.
What I will tell you, though, one book that I've been looking for is the Tome of Horrors that was converted to 3.5. And that book has been so elusive. It has eluded me over the years. I did have a copy and have no clue where it disappeared to. I'm kind of upset about it because I have a strong feeling that somehow I may have lost a box of my shipments along my time in the military. So that stinks.
Well,
let's see here. I just found a copy of Grimm on eBay for $15. And then there's another copy. There's only two copies on eBay. And the other is $160.
Wow.
Both buy it now. So buy it now for $14 or buy it now for $160.
Yeah, when you see something like that, you might as well buy it. Because, I mean, yeah, some of these books are used and everything. I don't understand the logic of some of these people.
Like B10, that module is usually pretty expensive.
Yeah, B10 is okay, but it's when you start getting to B11 and B12, King's Harvest and Queen's Harvest.
Yeah,
they're going for about $75 and everything.
Anyway, our last email comes from Tim. Thank you, Sierra Whitetail. Hopefully I pronounced that right. Great show. Started gaming back in 87 or so with D&D Redbox. And after a long break, I've come back to the hobby. I would love to hear you talk about how some of the monsters, really, I'm thinking about orcs right now, have evolved over the years. For example, when I started playing, orcs had pig heads and were weak-willed lackeys of big baddies. In AD&D, they seem to have gotten much bigger and more dangerous. They also no longer have pig heads. I much prefer the Warhammer Fantasy role-playing orcs. Okay. That their take is much more strong-willed, still extremely dumb and warlike, and has a lot of background material, probably because the orcs feature in the war in their war game. True. I've seen goblins get portrayed as more mechanical builder type guys, privateers, Iron Kingdoms.
Yeah. Yep.
Other games or comedy sidekicks to the orcs, Games Workshops again. Do your orcs still have pig heads? Do your goblins have
It's just the question. Do your orcs still have pig heads?
Do your orcs still have pig heads? Do your goblins have that lack of flavor? Well, what you could do now. Do your goblins have a flavor? An excellent show. Keep on the great work, Tim. What about you? Let's start with Matt, since Matt's been quiet here.
Yeah.
Matt, what do you about orcs?
What's so orcs, pig- I've always envisioned them as having, I think, like a boar head. I mean, hence how they'll have like the two teeth that are kind of stick out. So I think that kind of still fits with how orcs are portrayed in first and later editions. It's they're boars, not pigs.
You're all killing me.
Actually, my vision of orcs have been ruined by online games. So especially Evercrack and World of Warcraft orcs too.
Oh my God!
Like, what's so funny, Will? The orc.
It's just the question: do your orc still have pig heads?
Well, does your orc still have a pig head or what, Will?
Well, you know, this is real funny when you bring up this question. This whole thing concerning how orcs have evolved over the years. And honestly, this is the same thing that Star Trek had to deal with the Klingons. Because remember how Klingons used to be in the original series where they looked like almost human?
Yeah, except they were really thick skin, yeah.
Yeah, and then they come to the next generation, and then they have all the ridges and all the other things all over with them and everything. And just amazing how as time – I'm sorry, say again?
I said I like their answer to it when they asked Worf about it. And he says, we don't like to talk about that time period.
Right, and that was a hilarious episode. I laughed, too, when I heard his comment concerning that issue. And again, it's just amazing how over time, how much time has passed when orcs came into the game and to now, and how they evolved, you know, as what they look like. Right. I will tell you this right now. When I play first edition AD&D, orcs look like orcs out of the Monster Manual, plain and simple.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah.
Now, my goblins, I mean, no, my goblins are brutal. And I treat that, you know, like, I'll just tell you right now, orcs are not stupid. Neither goblins, neither kobolds. I give, they all have intelligence. It's not like they have an intelligence of 3 or 4 or nothing. I mean, they're not completely dumb. I think we're being a little stereotypical on these guys. But no, I like the goblins. I don't know if you're familiar with Pathfinder, but I like what they've done with goblins. Goblins are kind of stupid, mischievous, but in numbers they can be extremely dangerous.
Yeah, and like a bunch of like 8-year-olds running around.
Exactly, and that's the funny thing about it and everything, you know. And you know, they don't like dogs, they don't like horses. It's just amazing what Paizo has done with the goblin as a whole. Now, orcs, on the other hand, they're vicious, they're mean, they will kill you.
Yeah.
But I agree with Matt, though. I like the boar head, more of the boar head than the pig head. And you know, a good example of that, have you ever seen the Island of Dr. Moreau?
Yes.
Do you remember those, how the pig people looked in there? That,
yes.
I kind of liked how they looked. Yeah. Or was it Swamp Thing? Didn't he have like a boarish head or something?
Swamp Thing?
No.
There was Swamp Thing, the old Swamp Thing movie.
I thought he was just like, you know, seaweed on his head or something.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the bad guy he fought at the very end. Bad guy that drank the thing. And,
okay, I was thinking comic book character Swamp Thing.
I'm talking about the movie, but I can't remember.
Dude, that was like Swamp Thing 20 years. I don't know.
Yeah, forever anything. But, but Adrienne Barbeau, that was her name. And boy, she was a hottie back in those days. But anyway, yeah, I mean, yeah, they don't have pig heads to me.
What about also talking about goblins and orcs? What about kobolds? They've evolved big time too. Yeah. I mean, they went from, as Liz would say in Save or Die, puppy like creatures to these like almost dinosaur looking creatures. They'll be, you know,
yeah, they're like weird. They're almost kind of like furry velociraptors in some ways.
Yeah, and you know, the whole thing on kobolds are that they have dragon blood within their bodies, their genetic makeup.
Yeah.
But I don't know how they went dragons, looking like puppies to dragons.
Well, you know what it is? I think when I look at a picture of a kobold in the Monster Manual, I can see where the lizard traits come out when you actually look at it.
Yeah.
You're looking at a black and white picture.
Yeah.
I can see where it looks kind of like, you know, it could be confused with a lizard-like appearance or whatever, or a dog-like or whatever. Yeah, that is kind of weird how they evolved over the years as well.
Yeah, I wonder if some of the evolution of the orc had to do with the introduction of as the half-orc is a player race.
It could be.
And because all of a sudden you have these creatures that are mostly look like pigs, and then now we mix them with the human, that's just a little weird. Let's make them a little more human-like.
Yeah.
Oh.
I think I'd rather be an orc than a half-orc.
Yeah. Ooh, I hate to be the father of a half-orc.
Right.
Well, I don't know. It's just nasty. They're really more ugly than anything else. But, yeah, I really can't explain it. That's kind of funny, though.
Yeah. Great question, yeah.
It was a good question, though. I mean, it really brought a laugh to me, though. Do your orcs still have pig heads? That's just awesome.
What else has evolved? Just to think real quick, what else has evolved like that? How about Gnolls, they've evolved pretty much too.
Yeah, Gnolls and Flints, they're just still aggressive. I mean, I think a lot of things have evolved, but not so much as orcs or the kobolds have, really.
Oh, how about the Beholder?
Oh, no, yeah, that thing is just that's just funny because I remember the Beholder from the old days. It was just a big circle with a smile and an eye on his face.
Yep.
Yeah. And now it's like this big elaborate, you know, giant head floating in the air with an eye and all these stalks. And
yes, the super kind of genius looking with all these powers to kill you 20 different ways.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, most of the stuff has remained relatively the same, but there's a couple that have really changed over the years. As you notice, when you look at the classic version of the dragons, they don't look like nothing of the dragons of the first edition Monster Manual.
No, not at all.
Especially the black dragon, because it don't got none of those horns on its head and all that other stuff.
Or even the Dragonlance dragons started to change the look, too.
Yeah, they really did. I remember that, the black dragon from the first one. Yeah, it definitely was a change. So it's amazing how things change over time.
I guess it's just the artist's conception at the time of what they think something should look like, and that's what gets implanted in your head.
Yeah, I have to take a look at the Monstrous Compendiums from second edition and see how they compare to the first one.
There's a lot of the artwork, some of it's a little bit different, yeah. Ugh, I hate that blue ink art.
Yeah.
That was horrible. Oh. Ugh. Anyway. RFIstaff@gmail.com. Those were our four emails for this week. 570-865-4210 is the hotline. And you can call us, talk as long as you want, leave a message. We'll play it on the air. As long as you don't make fun of us. No, you can make fun of us if you want to. And let's head to table manners.
Typical. Of all the evil creatures in the world, I'd like to find one with table manners.
What, are you kidding me? I spent years cultivating the worst table manners on the planet.
Table manners.
Okay, on today's table manners, we're going to talk about orcs and if they still have pig heads. No, I'm just
That's
joking.
What we're talking about. That would be a good topic of debate.
Oh, yeah, this is going to be something. I'm going to be up all night laughing in my sleep. That's just awesome. I'm not making fun of the guy. That was an awesome question. I like
that. Was a good question.
Yeah.
Yes, I do. Just his orcs and pig heads. That's just awesome.
The theme of this week.
We're talking about jungles, if I'm correct.
Land of the Lost Adventures.
Was it Land of the Lost? I thought I was talking about jungles. I was supposed to talk about jungles.
Right, because typically your Land of the Lost Adventures take place in like a jungle.
When I was talking about Land of the Lost, I was thinking about Slee Stacks.
Well, everybody thinks of Slee Stacks, yes.
Oh, man, if you've never seen that show, you're missing out. But then again, you can't miss out on something you never had. Gotcha. Anyway, I know that I was supposed to be talking about jungles.
Yes.
And we're talking about, you know, the Land of the Lost kind of mentality or, you know, campaign setting.
Mm-hmm.
And this is very interesting because, you know, the last show we talked about deserts, traveling in deserts and dealing with that kind of environment. Honestly, you know, being a, and I hate saying this, that's not being a Marine, where I have been in a jungle environment, and that's in the Philippines, and being in the desert on deployments and everything, surviving in a jungle is a lot more harsh than it is surviving in the desert. And a lot of people might, you know, dispute that and everything. But let me tell you about, you know, jungles. Jungles are very dangerous places.
Right.
I mean, absolutely just totally dangerous. And let's talk about the fantasy side of that. And then y'all understand where I'm coming from when I talk about the reality side. Is one, let's talk about food. Okay. Food will be plentiful in a jungle. However, a lot of the food that you can catch might be poisonous.
Yeah, right. That's
I mean, it's just shocking at the number of species that are just absolutely poisonous in a jungle environment.
Right. And the food that is edible is typically very high in the air. It'll require.
Yes.
Yes. So if you want to climb that 30-foot tree to get that gourd, more power to you.
Yeah, you know, stuff like that. I mean, you'll have plenty of water. Water's not a problem.
Right. Because, but you know, water creates its own problem, though, with the jungle.
Yes, it does. But so let me get to the real deal and everything. Oh, the whole overview of, you know, dealing with a jungle. Okay, one, if you have characters traveling in a jungle, player characters traveling in a jungle, they have to be prepared physically and mentally for the rigors of traveling in such terrain. I mean, one, jungles are overgrown. Armor. Armor is going to fall apart quicker in a jungle than any other environment.
Yep.
I mean, let's be realistic about it in the sense that, you know, it's always going to be damp. It's always going to be that the players will always be wet. It's going to be misty. The armor is going to rot, especially if it's leather or whatever the case may be.
Is it always going to be humid, too?
Humid? Oh, yes.
Yes.
Can't even begin to tell you how humid it is in some jungles. I have never been in a dry jungle where the humidity was, you know, anything less than 110%. I mean, fish can actually, you know, fly through the air and everything in jungles. Oh. It can be so humid. It's just horrible. So now, with that said and everything, how are the characters going to travel in the jungle? Traveling in the jungle, it's just very dangerous overall. We talked about some of the poisonous species there, and we're not even talking about the plants yet.
Right.
There's all forms of flora that thrives in jungles, and those alone, that's the best part about, you know, the monster manuals and the least most used monsters are those plant creatures or the flowers, you know, like the poisonous ones or like the, what do you call it, like the Venus flytraps.
Right.
The sun, what do you call them, sundews? No, that's not what they call them.
The plant from Rocky Horror Picture not Rocky Horror Picture Show. That would be a completely different type of flower. Little Horror House. Not Horror House. I am falling off a cliff. Little Shop of Horrors. Rick Moranis.
That was what it was.
Here's a rope. Come back up, Matt. Come here. Oh, there goes Matt.
Yeah, so the sundews, pitcher plants, all, and you know, the ones that don't really exist, like the triflower fronds and all the other poisonous and horrible things. There would be no surprise if you found like the violent fungi and those kind of plants and everything too, and the big giant shambly mounds and hangman trees and all that. Yeah. So again, traveling in a jungle can be extremely dangerous.
Right.
The terrain itself, dealing with, like, let me tell you, if you're going in triple canopy jungle, you cannot see anything in front of you 1 foot. And traveling that kind of terrain is extremely dangerous because you could walk like 10 feet and then fall into a ravine that has been hidden and grown over with, you know, vines or what have you.
Right.
Mm. I mean, it just spiders, ants, insects
are probably really plentiful there.
And to mention the diseases that get carried through the jungle.
Oh, yeah. You know, and like I said, you'll run into all forms of that stuff because just of the insects alone. There's so many types of insects, I mean, disease, you know, carrying insects there. It's just absolutely pathetic and everything. So then you got to deal with taking care of your gear, like all your metal weapons and all that stuff, anything. A spellcaster would have the worst time there and everything if he's trying to look in his spell book and finds his spell book being eaten up by worms and rot grubs and termites or whatever the case may be running around there. So overall, a jungle is extremely dangerous. Now, of course, the focus on the show is the Land of the Lost. So now we're dealing with the other stuff like, you know, the dinosaurs and all manners of flying creatures, and it's amazing. Then you got to deal with the indigenous populations of whether they be natives or any other type of monsters. Like, I would not be shocked if there was troglodytes living there.
Yeah,
intelligent apes.
Yeah, apes. Of things. You remember the Sioux monster? But I don't think the Sioux monster lived in jungles. I think the Sioux monster lived in forests. Can y'all remember that?
No, I don't remember that monster.
Sioux monster, I believe, is in the first edition. I might be incorrect. It might be the second edition monster manual. I'm sorry, the monster manual too. The Sioux monster, and I believe the creature had psionics too as well. So,
yeah. Okay. Cool.
No, but you know, lots of things that can live there. But no, jungles, definitely traveling in jungles is something that a group of players should, you know, plan way ahead. Make sure they have plenty of food. Again, if we're talking about a first edition campaign setting, it's not going to be that much of a bother because you have a cleric that can cast create food and water.
Yeah, but you're also going to find a dry spot to sit down and put that stuff.
Oh, yeah, you know, and that, I believe they can do the opposite of create water, where they can destroy water. And you can apply that however you want to wish and everything. Or you just have a magic, you can cast fireball and dry everything out the easy way.
Right.
And like I said, there's numbers of modules that has a jungle campaign setting like. And I'm trying to think what the first one was. It was I-1. Come on, guys. Help me out on I-1. What's the name of it?
I-1.
It's a brown module. I can't even remember what I-1 was. Well, it was a Forbidden City. That's what it is, Dwellers of the Forbidden City. And, you know, you can use Mastica. That campaign setting has to deal with a lot of that jungle environment. Not mostly jungle, but, you know, that kind of region in South America. You consider that jungle?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I could totally see you just having like a, if stealing from the real world, like a Inca or Aztec type culture.
Right.
Inhabiting it. And those type of structures, because those are the type of structures that will actually survive in that type of client. You're not going to see a lot of just straight wood buildings. It will not last. But you will, however, see a lot of stone. Because,
Yeah, definitely see a lot of stone. And you know what? That's a good thing you brought that up. I'm glad. I forgot. What is it? C1, the hidden shrine of Temoakin? It's another one that is a great jungle adventure. And now one thing that I want other people to understand, too, that when we're talking about jungle adventures and Land of the Lost, you're also going to be dealing with alien type of monsters. And that's really funny you bring that up, because I was just thinking of Conan. When you notice that Conan was always going into those jungles and always come kind of hidden ruins and everything, the monsters that he encountered there were just so alien-like. And, you know, we're talking about the Yanti, and then, you know, like Abelants. Which one?
You're talking about the Conan books itself, not the...
Well, you know, in some of the their novels, the...
Yeah,
you know, they had like that one hideous one. It had like multiple eyes, and I don't know what it was. It looked like a kind of like a Cthulhu-like monster. But again, you would run into those kind of creatures there inside the jungle. This is the place where time literally has forgotten. And so, you know, you're talking about encountering new deities or worshippers of deities that had never been heard of before, that had never left the boundaries of the jungle.
Oh, yeah. So again, there's some great resources out there to play these settings. And I'd say the number one resource out there in D&D is Hollow World.
Oh, yes.
Pick up that box set if you can find it. It's probably going to be expensive if you can find it, but it is well worth it. It's a very good Inner Earth, Land of the Lost type adventure in there. Excellent, excellent, excellent. I give it high praise.
Yeah, I don't know if Hollywood – I mean, I was going to say Holly World, but see, there we go. Look at this. What happened today? Do you orcs still have pig heads?
Yeah,
but is Hollow World still even being sold these days online? I haven't seen anything.
I pulled it up on eBay. Buy it now, $40 for the box set. I see another one with no bids ending in 2 days for $15.
There you go.
Yeah. That's not
awesome. On Amazon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely pick up.
Yeah, you know, like $30 seems the reasonable buy it now price.
It is well worth it. It has a beautiful map. It has a great society, different races in there for you to play with. I can't go over how much I really enjoy playing in Hollow World when we played in it.
Right.
It's one of those things with Mistar that people didn't like. A lot of people didn't like Hollow World, but it's actually really interesting.
You know, another supplemental setting, and I know a lot of people don't like the Forgotten Realms and everything. It doesn't matter and everything, because like I said, you pick and choose what you want. The Jungles of Chult.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I'm telling you, you can't go wrong by picking up that particular campaign setting if you really want a successful setting, you know, that's really detailed, and that's the Jungles of Chult.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and something else, not just another game system to steal from, Hollow Earth Expedition.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Especially if you want to throw in Nazis.
Oh, no. That's more like a cultural kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's
done. Anyway, let's head into some game mechanics.
You think I'm mad? Perhaps I am.
What are you, a wizard, a genius?
Darn, a perfectly good brain wasted.
Game mechanics.
Okay, so we talked about playing in the setting, and Will brought up a lot of great ideas how to play in it, but you're the DM sitting down writing the story. You saw the Land of Lost TV show, or you were watching Journey to the Center of the Earth with Brendan Fraser, and you're like, oh my God, that's going to be an awesome idea. How do you put it on paper so the players want to play it? That's going to be the topic of this conversation here. What hook are you going to give them? What type of environment are you going to use? Are you going to go for the straight jungle thing like Will was talking about? Are you going to go for the forest thing? Or are you going to go for the whole, the land is just messed up with giant mushrooms and water everywhere and the temperature's rising nonstop and people are just really weird looking? There's many different things you can do. I mean, in Land of the Lost, I don't know, depending on which version of Land of the Lost you've seen, because there were, what, three? Two? It was the one with the when they fell inside the river to land and lost, and then they made another one when they fell inside the Jeep inside the crack of the earth. So. And then they had to land in the Lost movie, obviously.
Oh, that hurt. That was a total bomb.
Eh, it was all right. But with Will, what's his name? I can't think of the actor's name. Will something. Will Ferrell was the actor in. And Danny.
Did they have the Sleestaks in there?
Who?
Did they have the Sleestaks in that movie?
Yeah, they did.
Oh, did they? Okay.
Yeah, they were kind of weird looking. Like they were like alien looking creatures. But what hook would you bring players in? Would you just like use the whole Ravenloft thing? They are walking through a jungle and they happen to, like Will said, you never know where you're going to step and you fall into this ravine and you know you fall through a crack and you wake up and you're like in this new land or something.
Yeah, I could see also they're doing some cave exploration and all of a sudden they come out of a tunnel in the cave and there's this whole magical world that's just foreign to them.
It was Matthew, Will, and Vince on a leg.
At this point, I'm chanting like Land Before Time, something like that.
You mean the cartoon dinosaur movie?
Yes.
Oh, geez. The 200 of those movies they made?
Yes.
Actually, I was going to go to Herculoids is actually what I was thinking.
Yeah, Herculoids. That's a little more sci-fi-ish, though, don't you think?
Yeah, it probably is and everything. I mean, it's very difficult, you know. You know, with how do you want to get someone into a jungle campaign? Well, take it from the Indiana Jones, you know, perspective. Mm. You're looking for gold.
Yep.
Yeah.
The Lara Croft Tomb Raider.
Exactly. That's my point.
Yeah. Now, for as far as society differences, you're obviously going to have, like, these primitive races of people. Land of the Lost has always had primitive, like, these half-man, half-ape things. Like, what was that little creature thing that hung out with him all the time? It was like a half chimp, half whatever. You remember that?
In Land of the Lost?
Yeah.
Oh, I have no idea what that thing was.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was, but there was a whole race of them, and he was like shunned from the society. That's how he came with them. But and don't forget, they have those races, then you probably run into some human-like people that are not, they don't know English. They would probably know, you know, another foreign language or.
Oh, yeah, they could be proto-humans or. But honestly, you know, I just think when I say in that Indiana Jones perspective, you know what else I missed out on? A shipwreck. They shipwreck on an island, which is nothing but jungle.
Yeah.
Stick Gilligan and crew in there.
Oh, that wouldn't be very good.
Hey, they were in the jungle. A really weird looking jungle, though. A jungle that had sand everywhere. Kind of odd.
Yeah, that was funny.
But those are like some of the things you could do. I just want to touch upon that real quick. And Will already went over using the environment in his section, so.
Right. Yeah, you know, that's the hard part is, like I said, it's not really that hard if you a DM's got to plan out, you know, accordingly. When am I going to bring these people into a jungle environment or a desert environment and so on? And this is where the D&D first edition modules come in. You know, the characters get hired by someone to do something which takes them into that environment. That's usually the best and foremost, the most easiest way of getting someone into that environment.
Right.
I think the biggest thing you have to decide is when you go to this Land of the Lost, is it just part of the terrain that hasn't been explored? Or is it its own little like pocket dimension or that requires a little more than just walking there to get there? Is this something where you're actually like inadvertently finding yourself wandering through a portal to this land before time? Or are you just, oh, it's on this island no one ever bothered to look at? You have to decide that as well, because that'll affect, because then it becomes not so much what you do there, it becomes how do you get out?
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, that's a good idea, because when you say it like that, I look at like Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Especially the second movie when they had to go find whatever her name was, the real creepy witch woman, whatever, witch doctor woman.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot what her name was in there. Anyway, so again, that's another way. And I remember that he said hug the coastline and then they had to go into the island and you see how swampy and jungle-like it was. That's another prime example of how to get someone involved. They had to go find somebody.
There you go. That's another one. Cool.
The best part, if you want them to get lost, have the guides go in there, you know, take the party in there, have the guides help them get where they need to go, and then all the guides get killed, get eaten up by giant snakes and all that other stuff.
Or you could stick them on like an air blimp and have them crash on an island. Oh, never mind. Yeah.
No, that'll work. Put them on a spell jamming ship. It doesn't go all the way and crashes onto an island. Yeah.
And have like this giant creature in the forest that you never ever see, and it turns into be a smoke monster. Oh, never mind.
Yeah.
Just quoting Lost, the TV show there.
Yeah, you could even, if you said in your backstory, like, oh, the ruler of this kingdom, like, disappeared or whatever, and now, like, his son's taken over, and just set that up as, like, the backstory, player characters eventually are doing their thing and find themselves in this land of the lost, and then, oh, look, there's the king. He got lost in it, too, and now you need to help the king get out, and he promises you all these riches when he returns to the power. I mean, there's just so much you can do where other people have gotten lost in there, too, because you're probably not the first.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. And also the TV show Lost, we joked about it a second ago, but that's some really good inspiration for a Lost jungle setting type thing, if you've ever watched it. If you never watched it, I recommend definitely sitting down and watching the whole entire season of that show. Well, 5, 8, 6 seasons, whatever it was. Yeah, some really good role-playing ideas in there.
I never got sucked into Lost. It just sounded – it would be – I hate things where it's just a perpetual mystery where nothing ever gets answered. I hate those with a passion, so I avoided it from the start.
They did solve everything. I'll give you that.
From what I heard of that last show, it was very much open to interpretation. No, I want like the giant map with the X. This is how we end. You don't have to think at all.
Yeah, I guess you're right. The last episode did leave it up to your interpretation, but it was a nice ending. Anyway, enough about Lost. This is Lost the podcast.
Yes. This podcast is just Lost.
Yeah. Let's before we get any further Lost, let's head into the Creature Feature Theater.
Creature Feature Theater.
Creature Feature Theater this week. Land of the Lost Adventure. First thing you think of is dinosaurs, but let's put that aside. And let's talk about slee stacks. If you watch a TV show, you know what a slee stack is. First thing to talk about slee stack is slee stack, was that a native creature to the land, or is that an alien creature coming to the land? Will.
It was an alien creature coming to that land via the time portal device or whatever it was.
Okay. Matt, what did you think?
Considering I've never actually watched a episode of the show at all, I'm actually going by the Book of Knowledge, Wikipedia, for my reference on Sleet Stacks. But yeah, I could see them being more of like an alien. For some reason, I'm like, think the Stargate keeps popping the mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like, and then they, poof, they were here, and now they are making in this little remote region, striking out their own civilization.
Yeah, I always thought of them being as alien creatures, but I forgot about the portal through time thing.
Yeah, you remember that thing? It was like kind of like triangular like, and they would go in there and mess around with the stones, and different things would happen.
Those stupid stones and those portals just drive me nuts.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, you know. It seemed that the show was kind of, you know, hokey and everything, but...
Every time they had a chance to go home, someone was sitting on the ground, help me! And they had a limited amount of time to get through the stupid portal and annoyed me every time.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about that. Did the Slee Stack speak? I don't know if they spoke or not.
Hissing Moses, like...
The original one, they hissed. In the movie, they had one that spoke.
Oh, okay.
An intelligent creature type that was trying to trick them.
Yeah, so I thought that they were more indigenous. I mean, they were not indigenous to the planet. I think they were more alien-like.
But Slee Stacks moved very, very slow. I've never seen another creature in my life move that slow towards their prey or towards something they want to kill. I don't remember them moving fast at all. Do you, Will?
No, not at all. Not at all. Because they when they moved, they walked around like with a hunch. You know, like it was always like they didn't stand straight up. They was always bent down, kneeled down or something.
They always reminded me of like a zombie or something, or the Walking Dead, just like really slow. But Sleestacks, let's stat them out real quick, you know, just for the people out there. What would you think their armor class would be, Will?
They seem to be scaly.
Yeah, for scale. So
they had some natural armor class would probably be a 4.
You think? I was thinking more like a 6, maybe.
Yeah, I was thinking like in that 6 to 7 range. Because it's, I'm thinking of their scales more like snake scales than dragon scale.
Yeah. And then they'd have their natural claws, obviously, because they have those little 3 pronged hand things going on there.
And then they got their little horn.
Horn, maybe that'd be another attack. Yeah. Maybe a D4 attack or something like that. And their claws could be a D4. I would say they'd be susceptible to like certain lights, because I remember them being sensitive towards a certain light whenever they shined it on them or something.
Right.
Yeah, they didn't like light.
Right. That's why they hung out in caves in the dark, because they were light sensitive. So yeah, definitely you'd give them some sort of light sensitivity. You could even steal just the light sensitivity from, I'm trying to remember. I think
goblins.
Not goblins. There's another creature in. Like at the Fiend Folio, I think, that had like a light sensitivity.
Kobolds. Kobolds had sensitivity, didn't they? I mean, that's later editions they had.
Then. Yeah. There was something, it was like it lived in caves, but pretty much you could just go through like any of the monster manuals and just look at the different light sensitive monsters and just, you could just tack that onto them.
Right.
Sleestacks, that's fine. But now dinosaurs. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, dinosaurs. You know what? Do like they did in Land of the Lost. Have like one big massive dinosaur. Scarface, as they call it, I remember, in Land of the Lost. Yeah. Or Scar, depending on which version of the show you're watching. Yeah. Have this one dinosaur chase the players around. Make it so the players can't defeat this dinosaur and realize it, and they have to run.
Right.
So whenever they're like, they find like a base of operations, like a cave or something they can hide in, that they have to creep out and make sure this big giant monster isn't there.
Yeah. Now I could see having the smaller dinosaurs be more populated, like a velociraptors. Maybe there's a race that actually uses them as their mount.
Yeah.
I could even see people riding like pterodactyls.
I hate to be the people that have to train their velociraptors. Wow.
Well, hey, if people can train, if people are able to train like dragons and things like that, I think you'd be easier to train a velociraptor with, I feed you if you do this, as opposed to a dragon who's going to negotiate with you.
But how intelligent are velociraptors? What do they list them as in the book? Are they very intelligent?
I think animal. Let me see.
That's a problem. Dragons,
I think it's higher than that.
Because dragons have the intelligence of almost being an actual person in some instances.
Right.
As opposed to velociraptors are just animals, so.
But at which point it would be easier to train an animal?
I don't know, but a predator like that? How would you approach
Siegfried and Roy trained tigers, other than the one incident. I'm equating it on that type of level. Yes, they're natural predators, and their main thing is to eat anything smaller than them. But if you get them young and train them, it's kind of like, I'm thinking like the Rancor trainer from Return of the Jedi. That's so you'd have like one person who's like really good at it, but most people they tried it would just be eaten.
Oh, yeah. One big bite.
Yeah.
I kind of like the idea of a big giant. Like monster chasing.
There's like the one giant, like 50-foot dinosaur that just wreaks havoc. He's not everywhere at once.
No.
You may even hear, oh, he's on the other side of the continent. We're safe for a while until he starts rampaging over. It's kind of like Godzilla in some ways.
Yeah, it's kind of like you're exploring a new cave or something. You find something cool, and all of a sudden you hear like boom, boom. You know, he's coming.
Yeah.
We didn't bring up King Kong.
King Kong. This is not the monster. I mean, Island of the Monsters now.
Yeah, well, I mean, Isle of the Ape is a jungle adventure.
Right.
Yeah, you're sure.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. You could put whatever spin on it you want. You could focus more on the dinosaurs. You could focus more on the primates. You don't have to use them all.
Right. You know, it's funny how you bring this up and everything because, you know, it's funny because in Paizo and in second edition, you can have velociraptors as mounts.
Oh, really?
Or as pets. Yes, you can.
Huh.
I think there was a druid that was allowed to have a velociraptor, or it was the barbarian that was the beastmaster that could ride them. It was one of the others. Yep.
Master. Portal through time. Yeah. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. The worst one. Yeah. You could even have a couple different worlds and have, like, one is the Island of the Apes, the other is the Island of the Dinosaurs, and the other is, like, the Island of the Mycanoids.
Oh, jeez.
And then at which point, if the creative party will be like, well, if we can get the Velociraptors, we can then take on the Island of the Apes. And they're, like, constructing giant arcs to transport dinosaurs. I mean, you can get into all kinds of... You can easily turn this into something very, very wacky if you're not careful to.
And, like, add Mothra in there and stuff?
Yeah. Because really...
Oh, no.
Instead of a giant dinosaur, it's a giant moth that blocks out the sun.
Gamera comes and saves the day?
Yep.
I didn't like any of those. I like the big giant spider.
Oh, no. Gamera is really neat. Gamera is made of turtle meat. We all love Gamera. Anyway.
Was that how it went?
No, that was the song they did on Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Oh, obviously.
And they made fun of Gamera. They were saying he's made of turtle meat and he's yummy to eat or something like that. Anyway. So that's some ways to use the monsters in there. And let's head into Dragon's Horde.
Dragon's Horde.
And now we go into the Dragon's Horde, and we're going to actually just talk about how magic, maybe magic items will work in this Land of the Lost. Because just because you're in playing DD doesn't mean magic has to work the same, because perhaps the gods can't reach this region, or their strength isn't quite as good as it could be. So at that point, maybe the priests, their spells don't work the same. Or maybe the laws of magic that the wizard studied so diligently are different here. It's more of like maybe a wild magic. It's more shamanistic. And perhaps as they go to cast their spells, you can have some unique things happen. I kind of first started thinking about how magic is different in second edition, how it's different in Ravenloft. Magic, in all those instances, it works similar. You can kind of know what's going to happen, but there's always a little twist. So what would be some of the twists you guys would put on magic just to give it a little more unique, so it's not just like, oh, we ventured into a jungle and there's all these different monsters and just civilizations that could easily be transported anywhere else in the world. What twist would you put on magic to
magic? I do wild magic. I do like some spells at certain points to be more powerful and more in certain areas.
Yeah.
And be weaker in other areas. So if you shot a magic missile, all of a sudden it'd be like, boom, 10 came out. It's like, whoa. Right. But then later on, like just one comes out.
Right. Or maybe none come out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see anything that has like a random variable to it. Yeah, instead of it's a D6. You could, okay, I'm going to throw everything from a D4 to a D20 in a bag, and whatever I pull out, that's the die I'm using.
That's a good way. Or if you have a fireball spell, it becomes like an ice ball spell instead or something.
Right.
Interesting to see. See that?
Yeah.
I think that if you have any character that is attuned to nature, like druids, rangers, I think their spells would be impacted in a favorable manner.
Right. Or perhaps it's too much power and they lose control, where they're kind of overwhelmed, especially if they're, say, lower level.
That could happen too as well.
Yeah. It's all of a sudden they now have like the... they're on the expressway to their god, as opposed to having the payphone.
That's the other things that could happen. Now, just bear with me for a second on this, though.
Okay.
Spell components.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're not going to find your typical spell components that, you know, the character's used to running around while in the city or while he's dealing where he's at. If they're in the jungle, you know, terrain a lot, the jungle wilderness setting for quite some time. They're going to have to make up for those lost spell components and maybe find some replacements where that's going to have the impact on the spells themselves.
Right, right.
They're not going to find no mistletoe in a jungle. No. So I feel sorry for that poor druid.
Yeah, but your various gemstones will probably be a little more bountiful.
That could happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, substituting like components, like you said, and see what happens to the spell.
Right.
There it goes. You know, like it says, if he wants to do spider climb and he has to have a spider, well, I mean, you can be, say, like, well, you have to have a certain type of spider, but the spider's there the size of, you know, tires. You know, I can't eat that whole spider for a spider climb spell. Well, the good part about it is, though, it'll last 10 turns instead of one minute or whatever.
Right. Or maybe you do have to actually use the entire thing of that spider, but what happens is the spell gets amplified by that much. So nice. If it's 10 times the size of your normal component, it's 10 times as powerful.
That's hilarious.
You turn into Spider-Man.
Yeah, then all of a sudden if they add something that they go to make that climb, instead of just shimmying up the side of the cliff, they're all of a sudden on top of it before they know it.
Right, right. And I do agree with the assessment that if you are in a jungle environment and then now you're dealing with a new plethora of deities or, you know, long forgotten dead gods and everything like that, and here you come, these earthworkers coming in there with their new gods, you see where I'm coming from? I can see where there might be some conflict, right, and where spells might be impacted.
Right.
I can see your cleric going to pray to their deity and be like, uh-oh.
No.
And have some other deity start speaking to them.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Come to the dark side.
Right.
Have cookies.
Yeah, that's funny. I could see a lot of things happening in a jungle environment. And that's something we didn't cover it even in the desert terrain. When you're out there for so long, how do you redo your spell components? Well, if it says for a mistletoe and all you can find is cactus, well, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
There's also another thing we forgot about. You're in a new setting, and you're in this setting, like a jungle setting, for so long. What's that state that you get in? Is it cabin fever setting? You know what I'm talking about, Will. When something happens to a lot of guys in the military when they're getting stuck in a certain terrain for a long time.
Oh, well, that's kind of weird and everything, you know. I mean, like, I don't know if it's cabin fever and everything. I love being out in the woods. I absolutely love, you know, going out in the woods. I just don't like dealing with all the bugs and ants.
I think that would be more for people that were trapped in like a submarine or a very small confined space for a long period of time. Because at least with the jungle, you can roam and explore and see new things. Whereas if you were in a more confined area like a submarine, you'll pretty much see every nook of that rather quickly.
Well, I think he's more applying to, like, let's say if you go to an Arctic environment and there's nothing there but ice.
Yeah. I can't think of the term, but it's
I know what you're talking about. I heard of it before and everything. I don't think it's called cabin fever. There was another term for something like that, where you're in such an isolated region and there's no way to interact with the environment. Yeah, it gets kind of nasty.
That happens. I know that has happened in the past with a lot of military men. They're just getting sick of where they're at and...
Oh, yeah, definitely. You get tired of the same thing over and over again. There's no respite from it. And you know, that goes with anyone that deals with any harsh environment where you're constantly battling the terrain, you're constantly battling the insects, you're constantly battling starvation and hunger. Mm-hmm. It becomes a war unto itself.
Right.
And that's what a good DM needs to make sure, you know, instill inside the game that, oh, we're in the jungle. Okay, what do you all do? We're going there. Okay, what are you going to do now? Oh, we're going to go down this tunnel. A good DM needs to instill all those elements in there to make it a lot more harsher. Keep the players, you know, on their toes all the time. Like, you know, you're not sleeping in your armor, and you're definitely not going to be wearing it while you're walking around in a jungle.
Right. Yeah, it's like in World War II, the combat that took place in Indonesia, I think it was 60 to 70% of all casualties on both Allies and Japanese sides was due to the terrain, due to the environment. More people died in these very bloody conflict by just being there than actual gunfire.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you about that.
So
I tell you, you know, when we used to go there, you know, in the jungles there in the Philippines, you sleep at night and, you know, now I understand that we didn't have tents. You can't make tents in a jungle, but we have to make our little places to sleep and everything. And at night, you know, there's bugs. I mean, these are like, you know, what do you call those? Those praying mantises? Walking sticks?
Yeah.
These things would be like 5-6 inches long, and they'd be weighing a quarter of a pound, and they're crawling all over you. And you have to be careful with the food because of ants. Mm-hmm. Because if those ants get that food, there'll be thousands of ants out there, and they'll rip you up. They'll tear you up. And then you also have to think about the conditions like with the moisture. And this is something we didn't really cover in the desert because that's not an issue. But in a jungle environment, you'll get sponge foot.
Sponge foot?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. That's that mean that your water has been, you know, your feet has been in water or has been wet too long. It starts rotting. It's called immersion foot. That's the legal technical term. But my dad called it sponge foot when he was in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because your foot would actually look like a sponge. It would become spongy-like. Yeah. It's really nasty-like. So, I mean, all these things that, you know, is what a DM needs to take into consideration when you travel, in a jungle environment. You know, and just the terrain and, you know, just exploring and finding a ruin. The hard part and the adventure part is dealing with the environment itself, the bugs, the plants. The plants are trying to kill you. It's just great.
It's just great.
It is. I think it's great. Hey, look at that pretty shiny globule of honey. Let me go over there and touch it. Then the sundew plant comes down, and he's all ensnared in this big, giant sundew plant, and everyone's trying to figure out, how do we get him out of that without getting stuck to it ourselves? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. The term I can't think of, I was trying to look it up, but it's some type of stress syndrome.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised in that. And that could happen in a jungle. I mean, it's no different than that. What was that stupid movie with Ice Cube? Not Ice Cube. Yeah, it was Ice Cube with the snakes eating people. They were swallowing people whole.
Anaconda.
That was what it was.
Yeah.
Could you imagine being in a jungle with those things running around?
Well, if John Voight's there, I'm going to run away. So I wouldn't trust John Voight 1 second. See him, please. They trusted him.
And, you know, I watch some of these guys, you know, that make all these treks across the African jungles. They go from the East Coast to the West Coast of Africa. And these guys are weighing like 190, 200 pounds. And by the time they leave there, they come out there like 115 pounds. Mm-hmm. They have malaria. They got all sorts of weird diseases from all the bugs they've been, you know, eating up on them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I never knew that leeches could be in a jungle.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, let's head to our last segment.
Ooh, one of those electronic voting dealies.
Let's get ready to rumble! The 10-foot poll is back this week, folks. You've asked for it, we've answered. This week is a Battle Royal Supreme. In one corner, we have DM Will, the rules lawyer extraordinaire, by the book man of the RFI podcast. Versus, boom, 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 the expert army whatever guy from Thacko's Hammer podcast, full-on gamer. This was a big debate in our forums that we actually had to close the thread because it became so silly, but I wanted to put it up here as a silly poll. In a battle of rules, who'd win in a fight, full-on gamer of Thacko's Hammer or our lovable DM Will of RFI podcast? Come cast your vote. So far right now, full-on gamer is winning with 57% of the vote. Will, you're losing.
Wait till I get King Kong Bunny. I'm giving him a call.
King Kong Bunny is going to be your tag team. You're going to tag him in and out?
That dude's like 6'5", almost 450 pounds. I'll take him any day.
There you go. So cast your vote and just have fun with the silly poll. It's nothing silly.
Full-on can have the midgets. Hey, what was that, Matt? Was that WrestleMania 3 when they fought the midget?
Yes, it was WrestleMania 3. It was Hillbilly Jim and two midgets versus King Kong Bundy and two midgets. And then King Kong Bundy at the end turned on his midgets. So at that point, all the midgets joined together and beat up King Kong Bundy with the help of Hillbilly Jim.
That was funny.
Dear Lord.
That really happened, though.
I know.
I think that was the first match of the event, too.
No, that was actually second. The opening match was the Can-Am Connection versus Butch Reed. No, it was Butch Reed and Coco Beware. It was a tag match. Okay, I have to look it up now. But I know it involves Rick Martel and Tom Zink.
Ooh, Lord, as the days passed on wrestling.
Rick of the Model Martel with his fragrance.
Arrogance.
Really?
Oh, arrogance.
No.
It was arrogance. That was just what he called it.
Can-Am Connection versus Bob Orton and Magnificent Morocco.
Wow, that's a blast from the past.
Yes, and the midget match was actually on third because second was Billy Jack Haynes and Hercules.
Wow, I can't believe those guys. What year was WrestleMania 3?
87.
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord. That's the year I joined the Marine Corps. Unbelievable.
With the Macho Man Randy Savage.
Yep, Macho Man and Ricky Steamboat.
Yeah, that was one of the greatest matches of all time. It was.
Oh, yeah, it still holds up to this day.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, there's actually one point in the match where there's, like, I think Steamboat or Savage are going for a pin. And the ref counts two, and the crowd explodes because when the ref ran and jumped for the count so hard, they thought him hitting the mat was one. So they thought the title had changed.
Yeah.
Like 5 minutes before the match ended because of that. And they were actually rather confused when he said it was only two when they heard three.
Yeah, they were counting his dive on the ground as one. But no, he has to get on the ground first and then count.
Yeah.
That's all good.
Yeah.
I don't care. I'm glad King Kong Bundy threw down that one midget.
Yeah.
You had to listen to some of those comments, though, that those commentators there, because I think, what's the name is there? What was that guy from? He was the governor of Minnesota.
Jesse Ventura.
I know they was all commenting there and everything, and their commentary was kind of really lewd if you listen to it.
Oh, body, of course it was.
Yeah, well, and that's just and Vince McMahon loves that type of humor. So because that was actually Gorilla Monsoon and Ventura, but Vince McMahon has that type of sense of humor. He has the humor of someone in junior high.
Oh please, yeah.
So
man, that is so funny though. 1987. I can't believe it's been that long already. Wow. Yeah. And see, look how wrestling has evolved over the time, just like D&D has evolved.
True.
That it has.
With the old and in with the new.
And sometimes it doesn't evolve for the best.
Yeah, that is the case sometimes, believe me.
Well, back in the 80s, you had your face that you can definitely pick out and your heel who you can pick out. Now, these days, it's hard to pick them out.
Well, no. Nowadays, you can't tell them apart because they all look the same.
Unless you're John Cena.
Right. But how many guys do they in WWE do they have that they have? They're about 6'2", muscular body, tan, short hair.
Everybody?
Yes.
Yeah. See, we don't have Adrian Adonis's anymore.
We don't have King Kong Bundy's.
We don't have that no more.
Did you hear about that Roddy Piper was on Celebrity Guest, Celebrity Ghost Story?
Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
Said he was being haunted by the ghost of Adrian Adonis.
Yes.
Oh no, he didn't say that.
Yes, he did.
Did he really say that?
The only thing is, if you look at the timeline of when he said stuff happened about him purchasing the house, there was no way it's any of it's possible.
I know, but it was
he totally said it was the ghost of Adrian Adonis was haunting him.
Why did Adrian Adonis leave his purse there?
I don't know. They both were like. He said, like, Adrian Adonis told him to buy the house, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That must have been a long time ago because Adrian Adonis was killed in a car wreck.
Right. He's owned this for a while. The only problem is he didn't know Adrian Adonis at the time.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's weird. Yeah, that's unusual. I'll have to check on that and everything. Wow.
You know, Adrian Adonis' gimmick was a punishment.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. That's what I heard.
Yeah, basically because he was the East-West Coast connection with Ventura. Then Ventura had the blood clot issues, which forced him to retire, and Adrian Adonis got fat.
Yeah, that whole deal was all bad and everything. And I think they was trying to avoid a moose. They drowned or something, didn't they?
They fell off the side of a mountain.
Good Lord.
Yeah, there was a moose in the road. Their van swerved. They went off the side of a mountain.
Wow, that's sad.
Yeah.
All right, folks, that was your WWE, WWF, and wrestling history lesson. Yes. Stay tuned next week when we talk about King Kong Bundy and how you... Does he have a pig head?
He's more of a thumb head.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh, you better mess around with King Kong, buddy. He'll come up to do that bunny splash on you.
Keep it old school and keep your orcs with pig heads.
Yes, keep pigs with orc heads. Or orcs with pig heads.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Yeah, pig heads. See you later.
Roll for initiative.